The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 297.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone back to the Rebel Capitalist Show. He is the nomad capitalist himself, Andrew Henderson. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Oh, always a great honor.
Your specialty is really setting up a plan B. It's getting a passport. It's banking. It's finding real estate opportunities, maybe outside of the United States or kind of in the frontier markets. Is that a fair statement?
Well, my thing is go where you're treated best, right? Those are the five magic words. And what it was for a long time was people running businesses, people in the crypto space who wanted to reduce their taxes because taxes, they are going up these days in the Western world. I mean, my goodness, some of the countries that are proposing wealth taxes right now is incredible. So people, for a long time, we helped them legally reduce their taxes by relocating their person or their business. But yeah, what it's really become in the last 2 years is, holy cow, the stuff that I've been talking about with my family for 25 years, the stuff that I've been talking about as the nomad for almost 10 years that you've been talking about. Now more people are seeing the veneer stripped off of their country. They're seeing that the U.S. doesn't offer as many of the protections that you think it does, that the U.S. could cancel your passport in some circumstances, that the U.S. may not have the best passport. You know, who knows what could happen? Freedom is going down and people want a plan B. They want to get a second passport. They want to get a second place to live. They want to make sure they're covered. So it's becoming more people now who want to just make sure they're covered versus people who are ready to go immediately. But I think both are very valid.
Yeah. Can you go over that story that you've talked about often on your podcast about the Australians who kind of got stuck outside of Australia? I believe they were in India and the Australian government just would not let them back in.
Yes, some of them were. And I think from other places as well. And that way, Australia was not the only country, but it was, I think, the most egregious offender where there were Australian citizens stuck in India and some other places, but a lot of them in India back when India had a spike in cases. And the Australian government said, listen, we're closed and we've got a queue. And you can't come back in. And, you know, I don't think you are often in league with people like the United Nations, but you know, those guys, the supposedly the great oracle to these countries, said decades ago, everyone should be able to leave their country and come back to it. That's the point of being a citizen. Well, in this whole pandemic upended that. And Australia has said, apparently now you may not be able to leave Canada. So I'm hearing Canadians and Australians kind of saying the same thing is kind of like the worst.
Yeah, you can't leave Australia right now without specific permission from the government.
You have to get permission. Now, they say they're going to open it up. How many times do we keep hearing like this is it? And then, you understand being in business, things happen. Things change. You got to change your plans. That's constant. The only thing constant is change. But, at a certain point, is the priority to let people go back to their lives? Well, perhaps not.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so that's kind of a reason why people should think about getting another passport, I would argue. But then another reason, I would use my own example going back to 2020 and where the American passport turned into basically the Afghanistan passport, as far as you're...
Not quite. I think it was Rwanda. I'm here in Dubai, and there's my favorite guys here in the hotel are all from East Africa. So you were on par with them, Tanzania, Uganda.
Yeah, and so my story is I was trying to get out of Medellin, which I got a humanitarian flight to Fort Lauderdale. And then once I got to Fort Lauderdale, I was just trying to find some location that had some freedom, and that was St. Bart's in the Caribbean. But to get there, it was just a complete nightmare because no one really wanted to allow Americans to come in. So with that American passport, you're pretty much stuck. And if you would have had another passport, you would have had some options.
You would have had more options. I remember back, I lived part-time in Malaysia. Haven't been back in about a year since I left. And was treated there very well. But I remember back in 2015, I was at the hospital, beautiful Prince Court Medical Center, beautiful hospital. And they had a sign saying, if you're from like Nigeria or, you know, Gambia or three or four other countries, Liberia and the United States, that what was it, the Ebola or something outbreak? It was like the US and five other, you know, countries that, you know, okay, fine, we get there. There were people back then. I don't know that you were seeing widespread travel restrictions, but you were seeing some restrictions overseas for Americans. There's some increased, you know, scrutiny. Have you been in the US? You know, we got to check you before you come to the hospital. So the fact that these things only happen to the people in Liberia, for example, that's not true. I mean, I think that having a plan A is the most important. I mean, I've been traveling for the last year and I've been living very freely. And I think that, you know, being in a place that is free, whatever that is, whether it's reduced taxes, whether it's greater personal freedoms, whatever that means to you, I think being there now is better, being a day or being a years too early rather than a day too late. But I think the what people are saying is, all right, let me continue to assess and I'll get the passports where if I need to go somewhere, I at least have more options. But obviously, you know, if you're a U.S. citizen sitting in the U.S., it's not ideal if something happens, right? Because you are a U.S. citizen.
What's going on with Turkey right now? I was here. I heard the other day about some sort of option if you invest $250,000 in real estate.
So yeah, Turkey is an interesting what we call citizenship by investment program. So when people think citizenship by investment, they often think the five Caribbean countries that offer this. So I went through the St. Lucia program. I'm going through a second program right now. And in this case, I'm adding on some family members who can bring in parents, parents-in-law, kids, that kind of thing. So I'm taking advantage of that for the second program. But those programs are, if you're smart, you're going to make a donation, right? And so it's just kind of like you're writing that off as the cost of insurance. What Turkey does, it doesn't give you, it gives you a different kind of passport. You're not going to have access to Europe or the US or countries like that, but you'll have access to most other countries. And rather than making a donation or rather than investing in some, you know, schlocky real estate that you're never going to sell, you can buy pretty much any real estate in the open market. Now, there's a lot of garbage. There's a lot of shysters taking advantage of this. But if you look, and you know, we've got a few connections we work with, if you really look at the resale market or one or two good new builds in like Istanbul, I probably wouldn't buy anywhere else, but I would buy in Istanbul. Yeah, if it appraises for 250 in lira terms, then you can apply for citizenship and you get that in a matter of about 6 months. You've got to hold the property for 3 years, but you get the passport in your hand 6-7 months. They're a little bit easier to deal with. You know, the Caribbean is very formal, which is, you know, pretty easy for most Americans, Australians, whatever, but you know, it's a little bit easier going in Turkey. And you've got an asset that after 3 years you can sell. In the meantime, you can rent out. Obviously, if you rent it, it's subject to tax. You can live there. You know, Turkish Airlines flies to pretty much everywhere. My goodness. I mean, it's a nice little hub. So that's an alternative to the donation approaches of the Caribbean, Vanuatu, North Macedonia, et cetera, for someone who doesn't want maybe the best passport, but wants something in an alternative kind of uncorrelated country, it's worth considering.
What visa-free travel does it offer? Like, what are the main countries that where give that benefit?
Yeah, so I've labeled passports as tier A, tier B, tier C. Tier A is you can go to the US and then generally, you know, Australia, Canada, New Zealand. Those are the toughest ones, right? So only like the best 35 or 40 passports get access to all four of those countries. Tier B would be like you can go to the European Union, the Schengen area, right? The Caribbeans would be like a B plus, where you can also go to the UK and Ireland, which have their own separate policies. Turkey is tier C because you get neither. But what's interesting about Turkey and Russia in particular is they're such big countries and they have such economic, you know, muscle that pretty much everywhere else in the world lets you in. So like every single country in South America, Central America, pretty much the entire Caribbean, you've got that all covered. So from Mexico on south, pretty much all of Southeast Asia, I think you add Japan, you know, so you're getting countries that like most other second passports wouldn't get you. You're getting the Thailands, the Paraguays, the Mexicos, you're getting the Balkans, which has been a very open part of the world recently. So you can go to the Balkans. So it's, I would say it's a lot of the world except for the West. And so theoretically what some people do is they'll say, I'll get the Caribbean one, which has the European access in the UK and all that. And I'll pair that with Turkey and I'll do a 2-for-1 and, I'll get myself pretty well covered.
Yeah, that sounds great. So what are the details with the Maltese passport right now? I guess my question, because that's kind of a tier A, but I know that was changing. Yeah.
Well, so yeah, there's a couple of programs in the European Union. Now, some people could look at that as a pro, some people could look at that as a con. My recent thoughts, having just been in the EU for about 10 days, are if you want to live in the EU, I think it's worth having. So I think when you look at this kind of global tax harmonization stuff that may be coming on the personal side, you'll be able to get away with some of the great tax incentives if you live there. You won't pay zero, but maybe you can pay relatively low taxes. If you don't live in the EU, if you don't plan to live there, maybe you don't want to get that passport. But anyway, Malta has a program. It is a TRA passport. You can go to the US with it, in theory. And that's a donation. It's not cheap. It's 750,000 euros if you want to get it done in about 18 months. And if you add on each person, it's 50,000 euros. And then, you know, it's going to be more expensive on the back end than you would see in, you know, the Caribbean, for example, and certainly more expensive than Turkey. You're also going to have to, you know, rent or buy a property for 5 years. There's a small charitable contribution you have to make, and you got to spend a couple weeks there. So it's definitely an investment, but if you have about $1 million to spend, you're going to get the top tier passport, and then you can go and live anywhere in Europe.
Yeah. And the big key there for Americans, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you've got visa-free travel back to the United States. So you don't have to ask permission. If you want to come back 90 days a year, you can do that.
Well, so Malta's it's part of the visa waiver program, right? Well, there's about 41 countries now where if, let's say you're not a U.S., and if you are a U.S. citizen, you're coming to the U.S. as a U.S. citizen. You can't like live in the U.S. and say, right. Hey, you can't teach me. I'm calling the Maltese embassy. But
yeah, I meant if you have a U.S. passport right now and you're thinking of renouncing your citizenship.
Getting rid of it. Yeah, when we talk to guys who are like doing big IPOs or, you know, they've made, you know, 9-figure crypto fortunes, you know, that's the one that they'll look at typically. Maybe they'll do something else on top of it, just as a backup to the backup. But yeah, what you have is the part of the visa waiver program is you can come for 90 days at a time. It's not necessarily per year. Now, you do have, depending on where you're living, tax considerations. You don't want to give up your U.S. citizenship and then just get right back into being a U.S. taxpayer. You defeat the purpose.
Right.
But yeah, theoretically. And by the way, I mean, I think, you know, you would also have to make sure if you weren't born in the U.S., were you ever denied a U.S. visa? That could set you back. You know, if you're a terrorist, you know, that they might not let you in then. Or if you have a criminal record, that kind of thing. If you've been to like Iran or Iraq, you know, if you're an adventure traveler, that might be an issue. But yeah, theoretically, you know, they could give you some trouble, I guess, and say, we know Malta, because they know the deal. But I think you'd probably be fine.
Okay. How about the Golden Visa program in Portugal?
Well, that's changed. And I think as we're sitting here, you're probably too late to fall into the 2021 rules. But that's been very popular. I think Americans are the second most popular nationality right now behind the Chinese, which they weren't even in the top 10 recently. What Portugal does is it allows you to get citizenship in Portugal and by extension, the EU. Again, could be good or bad. You're going to need to learn a little bit of Portuguese. But you've got, let's call it 9 months to process, 5 years to wait, and probably another 1 year to get your citizenship. So you've got some time to learn it. You need pretty minimal time on the ground to do it. And in exchange, what you're going to do is make an investment. So where like Malta is a donation, Portugal is put money in an investment fund, a property fund, buy a property. They're limiting the amount of property you can buy next year. You can't just buy in the middle of Lisbon anymore. But there are some decent investment options that you can do. Probably passive will become more popular next year. I would say 500,000 euros would be the number to keep in mind. And then, you know, eventually you get that money back. So for someone who likes the idea of Malta, but they're not quite planning to leave right away, I think that could be a good one.
Right. So just to be clear for the viewers and listeners, with the Portuguese program, you're not getting a passport. You're
getting a temporary residence. You're going to renew the temporary residence, and then you're going to be able to apply for either permanent residence or citizenship in the future without having to spend very much time at all in Portugal. So it could eventually become a citizenship, but you know what, Malta, technically, they don't want to call it a citizenship by investment program. They call it the MEIN, and it is a lot slower. It takes you about 18 months versus what I would call a citizenship by investment, 6, 7, 8 months, that kind of thing with document preparation. So, you know, Portugal is certainly not a citizenship by investment. What you're getting is you're getting on the normal track to citizenship that someone who moved there to take a job, for example, would get. And you have the normal requirements to learn Portuguese. For example, but you're getting some special conditions. For example, if you're going to have a child born on the soil of Portugal, if you're a 1 year resident, the child becomes Portuguese at birth. It's pretty rare in Europe to do that. You only need to spend about 7 days there on average to to become a citizen. So where someone who has the job needs to spend, you know, the majority of the year there, you're only about a week a year. So you can continue your lifestyle somewhere else while working towards that citizenship. And then whenever that investment can be cashed out, you can get your money out of it.
Okay, got it. I know you talk a lot about Georgia,
yeah,
the country, not Atlanta. And can you give us kind of the elevator pitch on for Georgia and why you like it and why you've talked about it so much over the past, call it 3 or 4 years?
Well, I mean, Georgia has a good tax plan. You know, for someone who's watching, we talk to 7 and 8 figure entrepreneurs. But if you are, let's say, a freelancer, if you're a remote worker, you can go there. They've got a very interesting, for many types of people, 1% flat tax. So you can pay basically 1% on your salary up to about $150,000 a year. Very good tax policy overall. If the money's not made in Georgia, generally not taxed in Georgia. If you have investments in other countries, for example, very affordable, easy to make friends, very, you know, genuine people, beautiful nature. I mean, you've got the seaside, which is probably not the best, but you've got mountains, you've got skiing, you've got wine country, you've got a lot of different things. Listen, I think that Tbilisi is probably suffering like some cities are, a lot of cities are right now, in terms of a little bit of blight in the city. You know, they've been making some improvements. But, you know, I think it's a country that's been headed in the right direction. Low taxes. They've got to actually vote to raise taxes. So it's not a matter of, you know, the government says, hey, we're going to vote. No, the people need to vote. So no place is perfect, but they are beating the U.S. in a lot of the economic freedom rankings. And that is coming from nowhere 20 years ago, which you have to respect.
Yeah. And didn't you say there was something unique about their banking system, that it was outside of, was either outside of FATCA? I don't recall specifically, but there was something that made it have more privacy.
Well, the other thing is, well, so if you're an American, that's not going to work. Any bank worth its salt is part of what's called FATCA. They report your account, and you're required as an American to report your foreign bank accounts under almost any condition.
And an FBAR form, just to be clear, yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of things you may need to do, including, by the way, if the account's not in your name. I mean, they've figured out all the tricks people use, right? I mean, so if you have an account, it's reportable. And it's not just banks, it's brokerages, all that. So Georgia has some good banks. They require relatively low minimums. TBC is not as good as it used to be, but Bank of Georgia has some decent offerings. Other smaller banks have some decent offerings. They are now signing on to what's called the other one, the Common Reporting Standard. So they are now getting onto that. Well, let's say you are Belgian and you're living in Singapore, you know, they would want to, both those countries, Belgium and Singapore, will report your accounts between each other. Georgia is now joining on that. Now, Armenia to the south has yet to join that. So if you're not an American, you still may have a requirement in your home country to report your bank accounts, but they're not going to do it for you. And so why that's a benefit is, let's say you leave Canada, for example, and you legally follow the process to stop being a taxpayer in Canada. You keep your citizenship because only Americans have this tax obligation, follow them everywhere. But you're a Canadian, you leave the Canadian tax system and you go and live somewhere else. What sometimes happens is, you know, people see Canada, they send all your information to Canada, not knowing you live in Monaco, for example. Canada sees it, oh, this guy's got a lot of money, maybe let's look into that. You know, I've heard tax advisors talk about that happening with their clients. So if you can keep your information private, you know, that's always better. But do understand there are legal reporting requirements depending on where you live. And for US citizens, I mean, there's really no such thing as privacy, unfortunately.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
I remember listening to one of your podcasts. This was probably 6 months ago, something like that. And you were talking about your favorite places on earth. I think it was, or if you had to live in one country for the rest of your life, right, which country would it be? And yeah, you chose Mexico, I think, if my memory serves me right. So can you go into why you would choose Mexico if you had to choose one country for the rest of your life?
Well, listen, I will say I might amend that. Mexico might be number one still, but I think it was three countries. It was Malaysia and Asia. Okay. It was Mexico and the Americas. And I think I was talking about Eastern Europe, but I think I would probably lean more towards Ireland now, where they are opening up a lot of things in just a couple of days. And I mean, the people, the culture, really incredible. But why would I choose Mexico potentially? Well, I mean, I think one thing when you're looking at a place to live, you'd like to have some diversity. You know, I even this years ago, I had a friend who was he was an Israeli guy, and he lived in Singapore. Well, he can't really go up north, and he can't really go down south. You feel pretty isolated in this tiny little island, you know, and you know, where do you go? And so, you know, that's a factor. If you're going to be stuck in one place, you want a variety of places. You have many different climates. You have many different atmospheres. There's plenty of parts of Mexico that are pretty darn safe. There's some parts that aren't safe, like anywhere. Maybe more of those than some places. But I just think you've got, number one, if you're an American, a relatively similar culture compared to an Asian or parts of Europe, very similar. A lot of the same creature comforts, conveniences, stores, restaurants, foods, et cetera. So I think that for comfort, for the people, for the niceness, for the amenities, for the service, that's all pretty comfortable for someone coming from a country like the US. And so seeing yourself, it's not like Australia where, you know, cigarettes are $87 a pack if you smoke, or, you know, a bottle of vodka is, you know, requires a second mortgage, so you can afford to do it.
Yeah. And it's also not like Australia in the sense that you can actually leave your house. Which is,
well, they've been very, yeah, they've been very open-minded in that regard. In terms of, I'm sure that AMLO and I disagree on a lot of things, but I mean, they've been very open. I know you were down there; we had a conference there, and I mean, it's been one of the most open places.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot from Americans who are actually there. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it up. What are your thoughts on this global minimum tax? I've been reading about that all last
week. Well, there's two pillars of this global minimum tax. I think it's been a little bit ballyhooed. Number one, you now need to go and get all these countries' legislators to approve it. You're seeing some things in the U.S. where they're not going to push back on the entire thing, but they may push back on some parts of it. You also see, again, I was just in Ireland, and Ireland just jumped on board as one of the final people to get this thing done. And, you know, they made it clear that we're not going to raise the rate on local companies. So I think if you're running, what remains to be seen to me is, you know, if you're running a normal business, let's say in the e-commerce space, how is that going to look? I think there will be a reprieve for some time. I mean, some people think that they'll never even fully implement it. You look at, for example, CRS. I mean, countries that are signed up, not even really participating because they're not organized, countries not signing up. I think if you're a smaller company, there will be a reprieve at least for a while. And I think you will see countries like Ireland saying, we want to have lower tax rates. You'll see countries like Barbados, where they just adjusted the system from allowing foreign companies to pay zero, offshore companies to pay zero, and then having a high tax rate onshore. They moved that down to a regressive tax where they start at 5.5 and they go down to like 1. I think you'll see countries saying, well, if people are here doing business, then we want to apply those local tax rates. And so I think that the initial hit will be more on multinationals where, you know, they are in Ireland selling to the rest of Europe. Whereas you or I, or maybe many of your viewers, you know, we moved a big chunk of our company to the UAE. Why? We can get visas for anybody here and still have a 0% tax rate. And I think that companies like ours that move a decent amount of operations to a place like this, have other companies in our network in countries that pay taxes, like staffing companies in countries like Serbia, I think it will not be as bad as people think it is, at least for the foreseeable future. Will there be a time when the countries start getting together and say, listen, we're going to raise our rate in the UAE to 15%? Quite possibly. And that has been discussed here in the UAE. I don't think it's happening tomorrow.
Yeah. Another thing you've talked about on your podcast is this move towards retroactively taxing citizens.
Possibly.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you expand on that?
Well, I mean, look at, I mean, look at what happened to the Trump tax reform in 2017. I was talking to Doug Casey about this at our conference, and he was like the first guy I've talked to who said, no, I know it was bad for people who are expats. And what was it? If you run a company overseas, we're going to go back to 1986 and taxable those earnings we said weren't taxable. Right. So, hey, those were the rules. Not anymore. And it was dressed up as, hey, you can pay this great lower rate and you can bring the money back. Well, I don't invest in the United States by and large. So that's not a great deal for me. And so I think that you've looked at then thereafter. I mean, California, they're not as conservative as Trump. They talked about, hey, if you move out of the state, let's go after people. Right. Let's say
we're talking about going back 10 years. And what do you think about the unrealized capital gains tax? Do you think that's something that we'll see in the United States?
Well, they want you to see it. I mean, I guess the good news right now that we've been talking about on our YouTube channel, Nomad Capitalist, is, Biden's support is going down. So what does Biden need to, what is the horse trade to, to get parts of the agenda done before the midterm elections? But I think they certainly want to do it. Listen, I have never seen, now, I'm not 80 years old, but I've been following this stuff since, as I said, I'm 12, 13 years old, in some way. I have never seen more clamoring in more places for a wealth tax and for coming after the rich. And it's always about Jeff Bezos and his space shuttle and, all that kind of stuff. And so I think that they definitely want to push it. Number one, a wealth tax. Elizabeth Warren was on, I think, CNBC, cackling about how, sure, it didn't work in France because they can move to Belgium. Our citizens can't move. They're subject to our taxes no matter where they live. I mean, they're not even hiding anymore, right, George. It's just like, yeah, we know we've got you. And then, by the way, and then you want to come back for a vacation and they'll close the border. You can't come back, right? So I think that's a very real possibility where it's just, yeah, I mean, every year, what are your capital gains on paper? Just pay us on that. I don't know how it's going to work, but guess what? Again, even under the Trump tax reform, the goal was, hey, let's get Apple and all these other big companies to bring their money back. And it turned out that, you'd be reading the Wall Street Journal next year that some guy who owns a print shop in Sussex, the UK, who has a US passport, he had to cash out all of his money at a great penalty to pay this US tax. I mean, they don't think this stuff through, George. So, I mean, I'm sure it'll be implemented poorly. And then when your crypto goes down 50% next year, they won't know how to repay you.
Yeah.
I think that and wealth tax are probably two of the biggest threats. For me, regressive taxation, I think they'll have potential forms of it. That's harder to do. By the way, they have said it's constitutional, but unrealized, I think, is a bigger threat.
Yeah. Let's go back to real estate for a moment. We were talking about Turkey, but I know that you do a lot of investing in Colombia, and that's some place where I've done real estate investing in Medellin since 2015 in the Provenza area right down by Parque Arauca. But you're more of a fan of Bogota. So can you go over why you like Bogota and kind of what you've seen in the real estate market there for the last year, year and a half, because I've been gone for a year and a half. So I just get the kind of boots on the ground intel from my staff, but I personally haven't seen it.
Well, I'm going to be there on Sunday, and by the way, wide open right now. So I'll send you some aguardiente. But I like Bogota for some personal reasons. But we have some Colombian team members now. They came from Colombia. They brought me like the best aguardiente. But part of my reasons were personal. I like the climate there a bit more. I mean, you heard me mention Ireland. People say, oh, the weather's terrible. I kind of, after years of like Southeast Asia, I enjoy some terrible weather. I enjoy sweater weather and all that kind of thing. And so you have that perpetual autumn, which I enjoy. It's a bit more formal. My tailor is there. He says, you would never wear shorts here. It just doesn't fit. I kind of like that. You're in the capital though. You look at, I think, the fifth largest city in the Americas, in the second freest economy in Latin America. Medellin, I think, benefits, that state benefits from people like living there. People don't generally leave there. I think generally you'll see a lot more migration from smaller places to Bogota, and that will be a benefit. So it is, in a sense, kind of on the verge of being a mega city. It's about 10 million people, I think. And to me, that has value. I mean, to me, that's not going to slow down. Now, people do like the lifestyle in Medellin. It's more expat friendly. Perhaps the dating scene is a bit, you know, better. And so it's known for that. You know, I'm a little bit of a boring guy, George. I don't, you know, so maybe a little bit too much for me down there, but, you know, I like Bogota for those reasons.
Yeah. One thing I want to say about Bogota that's interesting is if you, you know, people tend to compare it to Cali or Medellin or Cartagena and say, well, yeah, it's a little bit more expensive, but what they need to do is compare it to other capital cities throughout South America. And when you do that, it's incredibly cheap. At least it was. I don't know what it's doing today. My employees have told me the prices have gone up substantially in the last year.
The price, it's one of those markets where prices do. Now, obviously, the peso has gone down. It's back to basically where it was, the kind of the worst of the initial part of the pandemic. I mean, you're down to like 3,800 pesos to the dollar. Right. But yeah, I mean, I looked at, you know, the property that I live in myself, and I mean, the appreciation, I don't remember the exact number, but it was pretty decent considering what we've been through here, and considering that people there are moving out and increasingly buying, you know, fincas, these farms outside of the city. So there is a migration there to from affluent people to be buying some of these bigger spaces, as there is in so many other countries right now. But no, I think appreciation has been decent. Rental yields are decent. There is some bureaucracy, as you know, investing in Colombia. That's one reason I like Georgia. You buy a property, you get a title transferred in 3 days. It's one contract. The government charges you $15. Mm. I mean, that's $20. You know, that's done. You get a bank account, you know, like that. Colombia has some more bureaucracy, but yeah, I think that you've just got a lot going on there. And, you know, for me, I do invest in frontier markets. I'm a big investor in, you know, Cambodia, for example. We have our friend, you know, InvestAsian has a fund there, very small fund that's done very well. But he's buying stuff next to the Royal Palace. He's buying stuff in the core city center where it's like the last thing for sale on the block, and the Hyatt Regency is building three doors down, and he's paying less than $1,000 a meter for that. So to me, that's frontier, but the country's never had a recession in the last 25 years. Colombia can't quite say that, but I think you can get something for not much more than $1,000 in Bogota. And you mentioned Cali. We looked at Cali. I don't find it substantially cheaper for what you get. And it's kind of this like third level city. You know, Cartagena, not substantially cheaper in my opinion. So I go where the capital is. The capital probably is always the capital, and it's certainly always the biggest city.
Yeah. So in your business, do you help people with the banking, the passports, the moving, or do you also have a real estate component to it?
We do real estate. You know, here's my belief. Again, talk about this on YouTube. The holistic thing is very important to me. Some people say, hey, can you do my Mexican residence? It's really not what we do just to say move to Mexico, because I'll tell you the story of what I'm looking at here in Ireland. If I want to do some stuff in Ireland, I'm already working with four different attorneys. And I already have some of the knowledge myself because I've been to Ireland a dozen times. I know just how tax and that kind of stuff works. I've got to work between four different attorneys and accountants in Ireland, plus guys in the other places where the business is, for example. It's a mess. So we try and do the holistic planning where it's like, all right, where are you leaving? Where are you moving? Maybe more than one place you're moving to. I've got a guy who lives 181 days a year in Colombia so he can keep his immigration status and work towards citizenship. Because he's a temporary resident, you can also just buy real estate and get permanent residence. But he's under the 183 for tax. So there's kind of that needle threading that we work on. And so we do help people with real estate, but you know, we're not a real estate agency. You know, I believe if you're going to buy real estate, how do you get the bank account there so you can pay your bills? It's harder in Colombia than in Georgia. You know, what's the tax consequences? Is there a reporting requirement at home? I mean, you get into this stuff, it's more than just how do I buy a property? And by the way, as in Turkey, for example, seen far too many people you know, pay $1 million for a property that's actually worth $400,000 because they fall for the hype. Happens in Georgia.
Colombia all the time. All
happens
the
time. Everywhere. Yeah. So, I mean, it's good to have the knowledge, in my opinion, across the spectrum. I don't think you'll ever see Nomad Real Estate Agency. but we do help people with the real estate, and then how does it work? And what I would say, by the way, is if you're going to buy real estate, what I'm generally talking to people about is, okay, Turkey, Colombia, you know, citizenship, permanent residence possibility, other country, you know, Panama, you know, let's get some immigration benefits from that, right? I mean, I'm not a U.S. citizen. I'm vocal about the stuff I talk about. Maybe I'm not welcome to come back. Who knows? Do I want to buy rental property in the U.S. in a place that I can't visit, in a place that I don't have some kind of access to? Yeah, it's much less appealing to me than when I was a U.S. citizen. So if you're going to buy the property, why not get the free immigration perk as part of your plan B and to make sure you can manage the property?
Yeah, It makes a lot of sense. I think probably the most real estate research you've done is for yourself. Maybe not Nomad Capitalists. I know you're a big real estate guy.
Well, yeah, I saw this Kevin O'Leary on Facebook the other day. And I remember he was one of the guests when I first started this. I said, I'm going to be this Nomad Capitalist. Like, I just came up with this name, Nomad Capitalist. I said, I'll do a podcast and maybe I can interview guys like Kevin O'Leary because I'll just be doing this stuff for myself. And I said, maybe I'll be on some show talking about, you know, Vietnam or something. And it turned into other people saying, you know, hey, I can't find anybody in Vietnam or Cambodia or Colombia to return my calls. You know, can you help me? Can you help me with my taxes? And so, you know, I've been through it myself. I love it. I would be doing it whether it was a business or not.
All right, buddy. In the sake of time, we'll go ahead and leave it there. For my viewers and listeners who want to find out more about what you do, where can they go?
So the YouTube channel, you're the big, you're big on YouTube. So we're on YouTube at Nomad Capitalist. We've got 1500 videos. So lots to learn about. Nomadcapitalist.com. We've got about 1500 articles. And then I wrote a book on Amazon called Nomad Capitalist. And we just published an update to that about a month or so ago. And so that's like 400 pages of stories and experiences and ideas and things you can do. And once you've done all that, we work with people one-on-one to put together and implement their plans. And so you can learn more about that at nomadcapitalist.com also. But I always think it's good because there's so many different elements involved in this stuff. It's not like just buying rental property in Indianapolis where you kind of know the deal. I would suggest watching the videos, getting a feel, reading the book, you know, spend 10 bucks, whatever it is, before you really dive into doing it to really understand what you're getting into, because there's so many misconceptions out there.
And I can't suggest the podcast enough either. People have, if you're a podcast person, you got to check out your podcast. It's 7 days a week.
And we put out some of the content.
It's not fluff.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. So the podcast for people who like to listen in the car, you can find us wherever fine podcasts are sold.
All right, Andrew, thank you again for your time. Can't wait to do it again soon.
Always good to see you, George.
Hi guys, I'd like to invite each and every one of you to the next Rebel Capitalist live event. If you are a fan of the Rebel Capitalist show, I guarantee you will love the live event. The next one is Houston, where you can meet and listen to speakers, all your favorites from the Rebel Capitalist show. People such as Dr. Ron Paul, Chris Cole, Lynn Alden, just to name a few. If you want to check out the rest of the speaker list and find out how you can attend, we'll put a link in the description below, or you can just go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. This is an event where you can learn to build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. But it's not just about building wealth. It's about increasing your freedom and networking with like-minded individuals, fellow rebel capitalists. It's an amazing event. I know you'll absolutely love it. Check out rebelcapitalistlive.com, and I will see you in Houston.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.